Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist with a very special interview for you with former Assistant HUD Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine's latest Solari report outlines the dangers of the Reset regime as they move forward with a transhumanist agenda that sees humanity as a resource to be harvested and is seeking to merge with AI robotics. Catherine tells us the technocrat takeover is here and is using every emergency to prevent the public from waking up to their plans. And those plans call for full spectrum dominance. Are we already at war with a globalist syndicate that's consolidating power on Earth and in space? Here we go, former Assistant HUD Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz, stopping the technocrat takeover.
Well, where was it? I read someplace within it, they had some general saying, you know, we're going to have to wear masks 24/7, including indoors. By ourselves?
Yes.
And I am just dying to know what the
rationale.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to make lists of all the different hypotheses of what the mask thing is about.
Yes.
And you know, I really don't know what it is. And at this point I'm ready to believe that their cloning doesn't work quite for the mouth.
Yes.
And you know, they want to let loose lots of clones into the population because they can't do it unless everybody's covering their mouth. Well, because it's so weird. You know, it's one of my favorite, you know, every week on the Solari, we have a Solari Hero of the Week. And I don't know if you saw Tracy Clark and her colleague, they're OSHA consultants, and they're part of one of the Michigan groups. And what I realized listening to them is, well, of course, the people who you should go to for advice on masks or OSHA experts, because they have, you know, decades of science and laws and regulations. And basically what they're explaining is most of the mask mandates are in violation of OSHA laws and regulations.
Oh, wow.
Because it's not healthy to wear masks.
Yes.
And what you realize listening to them is, you know, all these months you have all these OSHA experts who are scared to death to talk, and you realize how courageous they are for talking, but you realize how many people have been afraid and shut up because it's remarkable that they're mandating something which under OSHA regulations is deemed to be dangerous and not safe. And you would be, you know, you could be prosecuted as an employer if you were to require it, if you place under the OSHA laws and regulations.
Right, getting right down to it. Well, it's weird, too, that Biden, part of his trip was a mask mandate from the federal level, which is something that they never pushed Trump into. He was always against that.
Here's the thing, you know, Biden's job is to destroy all independent producers, period.
Right.
Because that's how you know, if you can switch everybody from being an independent producer to getting a government check, then you've got them.
Right.
So their goal is to create mass dependency and shift to transhumanism and technocracy. And it's that simple. It's really that simple. It's that obvious.
It's interesting with Biden because all the people around him that are popping up, there's a lot of neocons, and they've been saying, you know, endless wars was always a myth. We've done a lot of good in Afghanistan, built hospitals, and they've done this whole thing, and they're like rebranding the war effort after Trump wants to take
it. It's so nice to have a nice hospital as you're being slaughtered and liquidated.
Yes.
To have your body go through a nice hospital.
Yeah, right. That's good. Some good contractor fees. We know in Vietnam they used to smuggle drugs through the bodies. And they probably haven't stopped that.
Right.
Absolutely.
Stacking, that's what I love about the guys who run America. They are so good at stacking functions. They really taught me everything I ever knew about stacking functions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Catherine, let's talk about Trump's policies putting China back in line and how the Biden neoliberal forces can't wait to get back in power and get that China gravy train of money going again for them. One of the reasons to get rid of Trump was the pushback on China.
It did push back on them, and that's why I think there's been a tremendous effort both by the Chinese and the globalists to do something about populism. And it's not Trump that they're after. They're out to kill the independent producer. They want total central control of all production and labor. And they want to integrate humans into the robotics labor force. And, you know, they would rather just give everybody an independent business, an independent income, you know, with money that they print. And so everybody has to sit down and shut up and do exactly what they say. No independent producers, no people sort of owning the intellectual capital, the capital and the operations to give them trouble. So we're watching the boot come down on independent economic ability.
The moves that, this is fascinating actually, because as soon as the election was over, of course it's not over, as we know, it's really ongoing. But as soon as that started to happen, Trump's first moves post election night were to fire the defense secretary, one, and to remove other people at Homeland Security and shift around people at the Pentagon, including elevating General Tata, who has been very outspoken about intelligence interference and military work. What's going on there?
So I don't know. I don't have the evidence of what has happened. But when I saw Esprit's response to Trump suggesting that we send in troops to deal with the riots,
yes,
it looked to me like he was part of the group or in the know for the negotiation of the contracts to send the rioters in the first place. In other words, what I submit we were watching was a real estate acquisition plan. And I think the, you know, you had a multiple layered op of people being sent across state lines and financed state lines to go in and do what they were doing. And, you know, when you saw how the Main Street and the establishment freaked when Trump said, you know, let's do something that really stops them. You know, Esprit looked like the guy who had negotiated a contract to have them all do that. And now with Trump suggesting he send in soldiers to stop them, you could see he had a major contracting problem. In other words, the guys who'd been paid to go wreck the place are saying, wait a minute, we never bargain. You know, our scope of work doesn't include having real soldiers with real guns try and stop us.
Right.
In other words, we had open field running, and now, you know, so so they look, you know, he and that whole world of establishment figures, you know, their whole smart grid, real estate acquisition, opportunity zone plan, I think, depended on clearing those places. And the last thing they needed was, and if you look at how Esprit reacted, he looked to me like a man who was in on the deal. Now, that's just pure high-octane speculation. But if I was Trump, I think Trump was truly shocked. I don't think he realized, you know, Barr and the Department of Justice had the ability, you know, when you're financing people to cross state boundaries to engage in arson and felonies, the Department of Justice has jurisdiction and can shut that down, and they did.
Right.
So,
do you think that could have just been political expediency?
No, and I'll tell you why. If you read the Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, my online book.
Yes.
In 1994, Senator Biden passed the Omnibus Crime Bill of 1994, creating the economic basis for the private prison industry. The private prisons were then off and running, doing IPOs, raising capital, and everybody was licking their chops about all the real estate clearings you could do when you dropped in the SWAT teams and rounded up all the kids and stuffed them in prison. Okay? This is a huge real estate play. One of the biggest was in D.C. And the Republicans and the Democrats were in on the real estate acquisition altogether with Katie Graham, who even describes the real estate opportunity in African-American Washington in her biography.
Wow. You know, it's like,
thank you, Katie, for making it obvious where the Washington Post stood on all of this. So you had Republicans and Democrats alike you know, thank you, Joe Biden, in on a whole deal. I describe it. It's all part of the drugs, you know, the real estate, but it was a real estate acquisition plan. And the problem with it was you were rounding up kids who were either entrapped with the drugs you were bringing in or who were just innocent walking down the street. You know, they had the misfortune of being poor and black and walking down the street. And you're rounding them up and putting them in slave labor camps. You know, let's not use the fancy word private prisons. These were slave labor camps.
Right.
And if you, you know, I tell this, the whole story and document it and document how much money everybody was using on it, wasting taxpayers' resources. This was a big financial engineering and big money, big profits. So if you look at how that worked, you know, it looks to me like Joe Biden and his friends are doing the same thing. And it's bipartisan. So there's no way that goes down and Bill Barr does nothing unless you got plenty of Republican money in there too. So my expectation is, you know, if you unpack the money, it's both sides. And remember, Kamala Harris is very clear. Oh, the riots are going to continue.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure they are because, you know, those tech billionaires need to roll their profits over into Opportunity Zone tax shelters.
Right. Big business.
Every day I get these marketings of Opportunity Zone funds and they are promising, you know, expected internal rates of returns on the projects that are absolutely fantastic. You know, in a low interest rate environment, where are you, how are you going to get those? Well, it's, you know, if you can just declare, you know, take Minneapolis, take Lake Street going across the middle of Minneapolis. If you can just declare all those businesses non-essential, shut them down, destroy their cash flows, and then come in and burn them out of their buildings. That's a real estate acquisition plan.
Catherine, of course, you grew up in Philadelphia. Does this rampant voter fraud that took place there to swing the state to Biden seem beyond business as usual on some level?
Well, here's the unbelievable thing, because I'll never forget when Biden retired and Penn gave him this little institute, which is just more kickbacks. And I watched the university and the university endowment be a critical part of basically with the drugs and the mortgage fraud, destroying that whole area, you know, and as all the black communities got devastated by drugs and mortgage fraud, the university would get richer and richer and richer.
Wow.
And so then to watch Biden get this $5 million chair or whatever, it was just, it's like nothing changes.
Wow.
Nothing changes. But what was interesting is, so election fraud has been with us for many, many decades in the United States. And it's been, you know, first it was the big on the ground grassroots machines. And then you had the digital systems come in and the computer fraud just went nuts. And in this election, we see both. And it was pretty amazing because if you look, we knew, you know, I don't think they could have beaten Trump without COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they've beat him yet because, you know, it's still, I don't like to call things over until it's the state certifications are over. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the quality of the lawsuits are, or the quality of the evidence they're able to produce up against the particular state laws. It all gets very sort of bottom up quickly. So I don't know what the state of play is, if there's 10% chance or no chance or 100% chance. I just don't know. But it ain't over. And even if Trump has lost, Trump has tremendous reasons to want to bring out in court as much as possible and to fight this as much as possible, particularly until the Republicans lock up the Senate. They still have not locked up the Senate, and that's very, very dangerous. Anyway, but this time we saw this layer added by the mail-in ballots, and Barr knew. It was very interesting. Barr gave an interview a month before the election, and he said this mail-in ballot process is very, very bad. He knew how bad it was going to be. Because it gives you the ability to basically wait until you see how many votes you need and then pile in, you know, 250,000 completely counterfeit ballots. Boom.
Yeah.
It was funny. One subscriber sent me a link to the Pennsylvania database, and you can go look at the database online, and you play with the table press, and you have hundreds, if not thousands, of people who were born in like 1800 and 1900.
Oh, wow.
You're looking at it and you're going, what? So I think part of the occult trick was to make it so obvious.
Yeah.
And so in your face that, it, you know, it's all part of the Covidian cult. So, yeah. You know, this is all part of getting you to pretend to an official reality that makes no scientific, you know, sense and has no basis in fact. So now, you know, in addition to pretending that the magic virus is going to kill us all, we're going to pretend that Biden is and Harris are the have been elected.
Yeah.
Catherine, let's talk about the reset regime, this kind of global syndicate that has some interesting plans, shall we say, laid out at the World Economic Forum. Where are their technocrat plans headed, and how do we describe their direction at this point?
They are on a tear to wipe out and destroy all the independent producers in the middle class. They want to move to the next phase. So they want to end any pretense of democratic process and go to technocracy. And so COVID-19 is designed to basically, you know, if you're an independent enterprise of any kind other than maybe a liquor store, you are deemed non-essential and shut down. And, you know, that includes the small farms because they want to centralize control of the food system. And so you don't want to brook any more difficulty. You're ready to just, you know, you're ready for the independent producer apocalypse. And that's what Biden and Harris are going to try and do if they get in.
Right. They're part of a global process, these two, because we've seen it, you know, they're going into these lockdowns in Europe and the UK and all that, and they've destroyed any kind of democratic semblance in Australia, for example.
So I would say they are not part of a global process. I would say, you know, if you've ever seen, I call them poodles. I used to call them attack poodles.
Yeah.
Their job is to do whatever they're told in exchange for pet treats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you ever seen a poodle looking for their, you know, their little milk bone or pet treat, they're like, so I don't think these people are people who think. They're people who, you know, they take an order like a ticket taker and then they go implement. And they're thrilled to be chosen by Mr. Global. And they're eager to work their way up the ladder. Franklin Sanders used to say they pine for the treats of the tapeworm. And you used to see this, you know, I would be dealing with someone on a sort of rational basis, and then they get the call from the executive committee at the CFR or someplace like that. And suddenly it was like they'd lost their mind. They were so thrilled that, you know, that Rockefeller called them, and they would, you know, they would do everything they were asked without thinking. And
right.
It was because they were so eager. You know, it's so funny because everybody thinks money is a big incentive, but social inclusion and social prestige in our society, It's remarkable to watch. And you watch Kamala Harris over the last 2 months, and she's just so happy to be in the room, to be invited to be in the room. She's like, you know, I'm in the room. You know, you know, so these are not people with any power of their own.
Yes.
They're invited to be the designated representative to go do this and that.
Well, we have two processes going on, really. It's the election and the COVID, you know, the COVID presidency they're trying to install. All the things that they've been doing to create this kind of lockdown atmosphere, taking over the population with all these restrictions. Both of these things together, if Biden were to get in, what will we be looking at in 2021?
Okay, so the important question is because you have both the White House and the Senate.
Right.
Okay, so who controls the Senate and who controls the White House? And we've got the seats in Georgia open, so it's still not decided who controls the Senate.
Favoring Republicans currently.
Right. So our possibilities are all Democrat, all Republican, or hybrid, with the Republicans controlling the Senate and the Democrats controlling the White House. And those are three very different scenarios.
Okay.
And it's important to remember that. Now, let's look at the all Democrat scenario. Two things are going to happen. An all Democrat scenario means you get a gigantic stimulus bill, which buys all the employees in the country out of the independent producer system so they can shut down the independent producers and get everybody dependent on government money. And then it means that the SDRs from the IMF, $3 trillion, will be approved by the Senate, which means the IMF can run around the world and buy up everybody globally who's been slammed by COVID-19 into the Bill Gates identity mark of the beast system. Okay. Yeah. And then you're full on transhumanism, you know, and you watch, Biden's going to try and be part of implementing a global mask mandate that says you got to wear masks 24/7. Probably, they're probably going to require you to wear them when you go to sleep. You know, and so you can't even make this up, but it's going to be full on cult. Now, I have to tell you, I just discovered, I don't know why I didn't discover him sooner, because I love him so much, is C.J. Hopkins. Yeah. I don't know if you read his stuff. I found it because a subscriber sent me a link to the COVIDian cult, which is one of the most insightful articles written about the whole COVID-19 op. Fantastic. Yeah, uh-huh. For those of you listening, you can find it at his website, The Consent Factory. But if you go back and read his writings, basically what he says, and it's very clear, is the global ruling class realized in 2016 they had a problem. And that was that no one was enjoying their system except them.
Right.
And what he describes is, you know, they then turned on the shriekometer to, you know, to basically do everything they could to attack the populace and Trump. They had to get rid of Trump, but it's much bigger than getting rid of Trump. It's getting rid of the base that can keep producing support for populist candidates, okay?
Right.
But if you look at where they want to go, transhumanism is so hard for most people to fathom that they literally cannot fathom this. And if you watch what these guys have been up to during the election, because to me, the fake virus and the fake election are part of the same fake thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're all part of the same fake reset. So, but if you look at what they're up to, they're trying to get the tech guys to implement what you need for transhumanism. They're trying to get the pharma guys to implement what you need for transhumanism. They're trying to get the military. They're trying to get the central bankers. And they're trying to get everybody to do it in a way that no one can connect it in their minds.
Right.
That's one thing. And the reason I wrote State of Our Currencies and published it when I did was to try and get people to understand these different pillars are part of one thing. And you need to absolutely integrate them. I'll give you another perfect example, and I'm using this wonderful subscriber. I was on the phone with a subscriber yesterday, and they were arguing with one of their siblings about whether or not it was a good thing to destroy the United States of America. And her sibling was saying, you know, we've had it with all of these disagreements. We need to break up the United States.
Right.
So I said to the subscriber, because their parents are in their 80s and dependent on Social Security and Medicare. I said, did your sibling explain how you were going to support your parents in the old age now that they're going to lose, they think it's a good idea for them to lose their Social Security and Medicare? And they said, my sibling doesn't connect the dots.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They can't connect the fact that bringing down the country will relieve the global predator class from having to keep its obligations on pensions, on Social Security, on Medicare. They can't connect the idea. They're proposing something that will allow the global ruling class to abrogate all of their retirement obligations.
If you were to look at what takes place in a Civil War action, how does it abrogate all the obligations that the United States has in military pensions, Social Security fund, and everything else? How does it work? Let's say there's a Civil War and they secede certain parts of the nation off. How does that abrogate all of these obligations?
Well, if you're, let's take a state. So let's say you're Michigan and you secede from the nation. You know, as a legal matter, what does that do to your connection to federal obligations to your citizens?
Right.
You're no longer U.S. citizens. You know, I'm sure the feds can take the position you're no longer eligible.
Yes.
Remember, there is no paint-by-numbers kit on how to do this. We're in the invention room.
Right.
And so just as the states can invent what they do, the federal government can invent what it how it responds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm assuming if their goal is to get out of their financial obligations, you know what they're going to invent. But the as a legal matter, the latitude, the width of all the different ways they could play this are...
Right. I like your example of Michigan. Let's just go with that for a moment. So Michigan says, I'm seceding because we don't believe in the United States. And then, let's say there's like all of these things like race riots and all these types of things. And it creates the atmosphere where they can do that. And then once they're off, they've convinced their citizens that everything will be hunky-dory. We have our own economy and all the rest. You don't need the federal government.
Right. And so we don't have to pay federal taxes, right?
Right.
But they don't have to send Social Security and military pensions and all these different monies.
Right.
And then the question is, where are we going to get our military from?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they control the satellites, right?
Yeah.
They control the navies, which can block the food coming up into our lakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they control our skies and they control our waterways. But we're free, right?
Right. So any real secession would just be cosmetics.
I don't know. It might get them out of it might get them to abrogate the liabilities, but they're going to control through the satellites and the control of the waterways.
Right. Exactly. You feel that with the election and with COVID, part of this plan was to create a breakup of the United States to get out of those obligations?
So I don't know. I think there's some people who would like to see a breakup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they absolutely want to stop. As long as the federal mechanism exists, there is a pathway to get the $21 trillion back.
Right.
Right. So I'll just be a bad guy. You know, the first thing I would do if I had the power was I would demand the financial statements, the bank statements for the Carlyle Group, KKR, and Texas Pacific Partnership, or what is TPG's Texas Pacific Group, you know, from 1997 in October when the money started going missing, mm-hmm. until 2015, I would demand the financial statements for all those private equity groups, their leaders, and that includes, you know, Mr. Powell himself.
Wow.
And David Rubenstein, chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations right now, partner Carlyle.
So you got the Fed and the CFR.
So, but I would come at it bottom up. So I would ask for the bank statements of HUD, DOD, Carlyle, Texas Pacific Group, KKR, and then all the sort of key partners there, especially those ones who were in and out of positions that had fiduciary responsibility. I would want the same for the board of governors of the Harvard Corporation and the Rockefeller Foundation. And I would look at all those bank statements as well as the bank statements for the big banks that ran the depository for the U.S. government, for HUD and DOD, and the payment contractors like Lockheed Martin, now Leidos, who were running those payment systems. Let's just get out all the bank statements and let's look at where the money went and how it worked and who got what piece of the action. Now, that's exactly what they don't want to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you start abrogating or significantly debasing the pension fund retirements and the Social Security retirements, you've got a lot of intelligent people who have a lot of financial experience who are going to start asking questions, where'd the money go?
Right. I remember there's a famous memoir where an aide to Ronald Reagan writes that sometime in the early 80s when he became president, he looked and he had this meeting with David Stockman and some other people about the Social Security Fund. And when they looked in there, it was just a bunch of IOUs. And he was horrified because he realized that Social Security was going to go away unless they did something about it. So this is basically... This is the same type of situation, which is when we look into it, just like when you're talking about with the bank statements. You know, I remember watching some Senate hearings where you, when you first came in to HUD, and it was during a scandal of all this missing, you know, all this fraud, and it was all about cleaning it up. What kind of mechanisms do we have now for going in and cleaning up government agencies?
So in theory, there are hundreds and hundreds of mechanisms. You know, it's a little bit like the joy of cooking. There are hundreds of recipes. Nothing can be done until we have a significant shift in consciousness.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I'm always saying if we can face it, God can fix it. But we have to be willing to bring transparency about how the money works county by county, state by state, and the federal government. I mean, this is the source of inequality. If you come into Solaria, I have a new review of C.J. Hopkins' book on essays, The War on Populism. And in it, I republish a wonderful graph that Charles Hugh Smith put up in his latest article. And it shows inequality by country, and U.S. is massively the leader. And the... what I say in this review is basically it is the operation of the central bank treasury function that is the source of 99.9% of our inequality. In other words, we are using the federal government and taxpayers' resources to engineer inequality. And we're running it outside the law, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that is the source of inequality. Today, the CFRs just put out a new article by a professor from MIT, your neck of the woods, that said, we don't quite know where inequality is coming from. And I almost wrote back to him and said, you know, David Rubenstein is the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. He knows where it came from because Carlyle was a huge beneficiary of it. So go get David to explain to you where inequality comes from and why his cost of capital at Carlyle is 0% and the average American is paying 16 to 17% on their credit card. David can explain it to you.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So we have to bring transparency to the federal credit mechanism and the fact that it's being managed outside the law and then how that relates to how the money works in every one of our 3,100 counties. And if you can get 10% of the American people to sit down and say, okay, I'm ready to roll up my sleeves and go to work reengineering the money, something can happen. But it can't happen unless you first turn on the lights. And that's a big problem, Daniel, because I would submit to you the number one problem in America right now, as it looks to me, is mind control.
Mm-hmm.
The competitive edge of the leadership group is they have done an incredible job of taking mind control and moving it out of the Manchurian candidate world and into the I'm on my cell phone zombie trance world.
Right.
Because the average American cannot connect the dots and they are addicted to watching the Shriekometer.
Right.
Right.
This is a major problem. And the mind control... gets into every area, everything from entertainment to politics to, ideas about freedom and civil rights. You know, the idea that civil rights now constitutes an 8-year-old kid choosing his own gender. You know, this is this is maybe a good snapshot example of this. But let's look at this. I want to nail this missing trillions aspect. You've looked at it for two decades. you've come up with incredible background in these agencies of missing funds. And the amounts that you actually tabulate, there's like a proven amount, and then there's amount that you kind of speculate is out there. The amount you speculate is out there is about 60 trillion, and the proven amount that you've come up with so far is 21 trillion.
Well, the undocumentable adjustments in federal accounts is 21 trillion. The amount lent or given during the bailouts is 24 to 29. Those two numbers together, that's what puts you at $50 trillion.
Right.
And the 24 to 29 was an estimate done by the Levy Institute, but it fits with the numbers we did during the bailouts. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty confident. And the TARP, I think the TARP Inspector General mentioned 24 to 29 trillion. So those two are documented by government numbers. But
exactly.
Here's the thing. Those numbers depend on a system that refuses to obey the laws related to financial audits, financial accounting, and disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were doing business with a company that for 20 plus years refused to obey the law regarding accounting and finance, I dare say you wouldn't trust anything they say.
Exactly.
Now, in addition to that $50 trillion that we know, we have beyond that indication of massive securities fraud using treasuries and government mortgage-backed securities. But then in addition, we have, if you come to missingmoney.salieri.com, we have a series of 7 articles on the different laws related to federal credit mechanism, including the black budget and classification laws, and on FASB 56. So FASB Statement 56 was adopted in 2018 by Trump and both sides of the House and Senate, totally bipartisan. And that FASB 56 was a neat accounting trick that took the entire U.S. financial government finances completely dark. Okay.
So if someone wanted to go in there and audit it from an independent point of view, those numbers are no longer accessible.
No, they're no longer meaningful. If I can move out of the accounts anything I want without telling you who did it, who decided, what it did, where it went, what it was, what's not in there, then the documents that I give you are totally meaningless. They mean nothing. Because I can do that. I can do that at 24 agencies and 156 related entities.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so we just published a new article by Dr. Skidmore.
Mm-hmm.
It's called FASB Statement 56 and the Classification Laws. If you come into Salieri.com, it's right under what's new on the homepage. And what he describes is when you combine this with the National Intelligence Director has the power to waive SEC provisions for any private company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I can take 100 of the banks and contractors who do business with the federal government. I can waive their obligation to comply with SEC laws related to disclosure, and then I can pump into them as much money as I want through FASB 56 secretly using taxpayer resources, but reporting nothing. I can break the law all day long. It's infinite money for private armies of the kind that are being dropped into almost every American city to burn Americans out of their businesses and homes, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So once you did that, what you're saying is there is absolutely no way when you look at the U.S. securities market of knowing what's real or not.
Since 2018.
Since October 2018. So while everybody was worrying about Brett Kavanaugh's childhood sex life, Nancy and Mitch McConnell and Schumer and Trump, and Mulvaney were, basically adopting FASB Statement 56. Now, if that money was the money that engineered the election fraud, Trump has only himself to blame. The Trump administration did that.
Right.
They did that. Now, let me just mention one other thing. We've watched this year. So there are two pieces of information. Joseph and I love to do unanswered questions.
Yes.
So these are two of my favorite unanswered questions for 2020. Okay, so one of them is, this year Jeff Bezos sold $10 billion of stock, and Buffett at Berkshire Hathaway bought back, you know, and he's always been opposed to buybacks. He bought back at $9 billion of stock, thus giving $9 billion to some of his top largest investors, presumably, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's $19 billion from Bezos and Buffett.
Right.
Where did that money go?
Where did it go?
Where did it go? So, yes, I want to know where the $21 trillion went, but I'll bet you if you wanted to find that $21 trillion, knowing where that $19 billion went would really help a lot. The other one I want to know is, you'll know immediately because you and Joseph had a great conversation with it in your monkey business discussion. I want to know what Charles Lieber was doing in Wuhan.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of my questions on Wuhan was, did he and Mr. Gates and Mr. Fauci have a prototype on brain-machine interface that went bad?
And escaped the lab?
No. If you look at the financial patterns, there was no escape the lab.
Okay.
We have pathogens around the world. First of all, this is not one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But whatever they're doing, they can turn it on and off.
Yeah.
So this was not an escape, because the U.S. dollar has never gotten a mirror. You know, what you're saying is all the angels of the angelic hierarchy were there to save the U.S. dollar with the most magical intervention that just happened by divine authority.
Right.
No way. So whatever pathogens were being were operating, and however they were being brought to bear, it was very intentional.
Well, let's look at this for bullet points for a second. The official story, there's a bat and gets out of this Wuhan thing, and China doesn't tell everyone in time. Okay, we all know that that's ridiculous.
Now, can I just stop you?
Yeah.
Have you ever read the Ellis Metavoy Green Monkey story?
Yes, we went into it in our last question.
Okay. So the bat is just the green monkey.
Right.
Now, did you see the Denmark is eradicating their mink population?
Yes.
On the theory that this can go from bats to humans to minks and back to humans mutated?
Right.
Right. So we've gone from green monkeys to bats to minks.
What is the motivation behind destroying 17 million minks? Who's coordinating that? That's very unusual.
Horrific.
I can't imagine. I know there's just, you look at those and you think, because you and I are in a similar situation. We're publishers. We're going through the day looking at thousands of stories saying, okay, you know, what's the deeper message and what's important?
Right.
And so many times during the day, you look at something, you start to laugh and you say, you know, there's a story there. And I would love to know that story, but I'm not going to spend 1,000 hours getting to the bottom of that one, because that's not going to help my subscribers. You know,
like Hunter Biden's laptop, for example.
Well, I think, you know, Giuliani had used the laptop thing with great success. I mean, I really believe Anthony Weiner's laptop won the 2016 election for Trump. I really do. It's
because of the incredible corrupt details that were on the laptop. Yeah.
And I wish they could have gotten Hunter Biden's laptop a month earlier. So,
yeah.
You know, they started with it late. But watching the censorship on all of that was pretty incredible.
Remarkable.
Yeah, when Joseph talked about the Chinese website that would allow you to go look at pieces.
Yes.
But there's no longer such a thing as a search on the internet. The censorship is unbelievable, so I couldn't find it.
And Twitter censored the New York Post.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's very appropriate because Alexander Hamilton essentially wrote the Constitution and he started the New York Post. So it would be very appropriate that Twitter would shut down Alexander Hamilton's newspaper because they're trying to shut down his Constitution. That's for sure.
No question about it. I want to spend a minute on Twitter because you have announced that you're maybe leaving Twitter because of the type of censorship that they've been performing. We've seen them take the president of the United States and delete his tweets, put up warnings on his tweets, completely blocking that interface. When Trump came out after the initial election results and said, this is the actions that we're taking, they kept cutting in from these different news sources. And you can look, there are a number of compilation videos about these news people saying the president is spreading disinformation. So there's no longer a free flow of somebody says something and somebody else facts checks it or whatever. It's just stop them. Don't even look at it. You can't look at it. The censorship has to be that deep.
So the corporate media, with rare exception, has never accepted the results of the 2016 election.
Right.
And that is an example of not accepting the results of the election because it is very inappropriate for the corporate media to censor the president. The president is free to say what he thinks, you know, right. And we elected him, and that's because we want to hear what he thinks.
Yes.
And the corporate media is saying, you know, well, we choose to now. What I will tell you is, to me, that's not the corporate media. That's basically the U.S. intelligence agencies, because they control the shriekometer, in my experience. I think Senator Schumer is correct on that one.
Yeah, right. He gave us
intel. I was waiting to see whether, you know, he would give CIA head the boot as well as DOD head.
That's a good point, actually, because you have Gina Haspel out there. And Trump hasn't fired her as this act of realizing that the CIA was involved in rigging this vote, which is what they do quite well, interestingly.
They're great. You know something, they're really good at it. One of my favorite stories is in Christopher Simpson's book, Blowback. He describes the Dulles brothers sitting at Sullivan and Cromwell, and they've won the war, and they've laundered the Nazi, you know, the monies they see from the Nazis into the exchange stabilization fund, and the Vatican has asked them to rig the 48 elections in Europe, you know, because they're worried about the independent producers once again having a say.
Right.
but they're calling them communists, you know.
Right.
So this is the beginning of Operation Gladio and the rigging of elections, and it starts the long and sordid history of rigging elections since World War II.
You do have some very interesting people studying the Dominion software that flipped a lot of these elections. We know how easy it is to rig software to flip elections.
Right.
We've talked to people who have been involved in developing programs that could do that. So it's just a fact. Homeland Security came out and the New York Times put it up as their headline, which doesn't really mean a great deal anymore in terms of credibility. But there they were saying this was the safest election ever. Now, is that fear? Because, you know, why would you even do that? Because everyone knows
you kind of wonder. I don't know. You'd have to drill down to the specifics.
Right.
But I've gone through enough. You know, I had an enormous encounter with the New York Times.
Yes.
Where they basically, if I'm right, broke the law. And they have I ever told you that story?
The Roger Stone story?
Yeah, that was the Roger Stone. Okay, so I've told you the Roger Stone story.
Yeah.
But they basically printed something, it was in the print shop and it was false. Mm-hmm. And luckily the print shop gave the reporter a heads up because they were changing it. They were making the print shop change it without her permission. Uh-huh. And the print shop called her and she had to quit to shut it down. And wow. And what they were putting in there was just like fabricated, not true. And, you know, the Washington editor who was doing it was going to basically kept his job. So, you know, it was something like that with the Washington Post, you know, which was arguably even more ugly. But, you know, these entities are not their job, they're writing a fiction story.
Right.
They're writing, how can I describe it? You know, it's like writing a, it's like scripting and inventing a reality TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And their job has nothing to do with the truth. And now on any, you know, there are many stories that are non-controversial, and you will see very intelligent, capable reporters trying to do a high integrity job of, you know, describing what the construction in the Washington sewer system is going to be over the next year. Do you know what
right.
I mean? So I'm not saying that, you know, there's not a lot of that, but their job is basically to invent a cover story for the Empire. That's what they do.
Wow.
And they're writing fiction. It's a fictional story that they're writing, and that's what they do. And why? But I think the problem is not that they do it, is why in the world does anybody read them or listen to them?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. The problem is not that they're doing what they're doing. The problem is, why is anybody paying attention to them?
Yes. And I speak to very intelligent people, and they're like, every day I wake up with the New York Times. And I said, well, you know, if this were 1977, you might be getting some pretty good information.
Right.
You have to realize it's 2020, and even though you've had them for decades, that they have turned into a totally different thing. As a matter of fact, they've lost a lot of valuable contributors because of that environment of just creating their own reality. It's interesting because Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi and people who are generally associated with more kind of left ideas, they see the kind of sick censorship around mainstream media and the tech companies. So it's
right.
a very strange thing. We actually have a kind of a neoliberal control base around the media and the tech companies, and the traditional liberals, they're isolated. They've frozen them out along with these other voices coming more from, you know, the populism side. So it's kind of interesting. You're getting rid of both the kind of Trump voices and these other voices over here on the left. It's not even like you're celebrating a natural kind of left-right paradigm in America. You're basically moving these people over on the left who have objected to you and these people over here on the populism Trump side who've objected to you, and you're taking this very small sliver in the middle and you're using that as the basis of reality.
Well, but here's what you've got. It's the same with the churches. In America 10 years ago, you had two kinds of churches. You had a church that was supported with the tithes and donations of its congregation, or you had a church that was run by a top-down endowment and the pastor was chosen sort of by the top-down process. Okay?
Right.
So where is the media that can generate enough money to cover its costs? Big problem. That's been the problem with investigative reporter. Where's the media that can cover its costs with the support of its listeners and donors and subscribers that can afford to tell the truth?
Yes.
Because, you know, I know a lot of great reporters and they're out there hustling and they're very talented. They're very capable. They want to do a good job. But you know something? They want to get invited to Brookings. And, you know, they want an award from Harvard. And they want to be invited to write for the New York Times. So they're hungering to rise up in the Empire's ladder, and they have yet to face that there is no opportunity on that ladder for anybody seeking the truth. So they're trying to find the middle of the road, and there isn't any. I mean, that's what I accepted in 1998 when I said, I'm out. I'm out. I'm never going back. I'm going to figure out a way to support myself out there in the wilderness, and I'm just going to follow the truth. And you know something? I mean, you've been on a similar path, but you know something? What I've found is the truth can be a very lonely road.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it has its joys. It's, you know, but, you know, it's a very lonely road because I would say 9 out of 10 people who you think are independent media, they're pining for the treats of the tapeworm.
Yes, absolutely. And this is a problem. It's sort of like a institutional problem.
No, it's not a problem, but it's an opportunity, because if you are a consumer of intelligence, so I divide it this way, you got news, you got entertainment, and you got intelligence. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's very important is, if you want intelligence, it's very important to not mix that up with entertainment or news. Okay. If you're trying to get your intelligence from entertainment, you're toast. Okay. Yes. So you want to divide those three spaces. And then when you want intelligence, you are going to have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. You know, intelligence, that if you look at the guys who run the planet, Mr. Goebel pays a fortune for good intelligence.
Yeah.
That is, you know, good intelligence is what wins the war, not the biggest weapons. Weapons help, but you got to have intelligence. So you've got to decide, okay, what are you going to pay for intelligence and how are you going to get it? And you have to spend time and money, and you have to be able to think very clearly about dividing that from entertainment. I have seen more family fortunes destroyed by people looking for intelligence and getting it in entertainment. And the next thing you know, fear porn, hope porn, they've been relieved of their bank account.
Right.
Right. Right. So now, if we can create a class of citizens who are willing to go to work to be part of and build intelligence networks, you know, and don't hunger for the treats of the tapeworm. You know, it's funny. I'm a new C.J. Hopkins fan, so I have to keep quoting him. But he starts off his latest book of essays with a quote from George Orwell, where he says, "If there's hope, it's among the proles."
Yes.
So us proles are going to have to build and manage and run our own intelligence networks. That's how it is, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the leadership plan, God love him, is going to fail.
Yeah.
So we got to invent our own plan. If we want a human civilization, we're going to have to invent it.
Give me 1 minute of what you think that leadership plan is.
Hold it. Do you have state of our currency?
Yes.
Where is it? Just hold it up. That's the plan.
That's the plan.
I wrote out their plan. I wrote out what they're doing. I wrote up how they're doing it and what they're doing and how to understand it and watch what the Great Reset is. They're trying to extend the dollar reserve currency and bring in a new all digital system.
Yes.
And it's not a currency system. It's the end of currencies. It's a complete control system.
Right. It's right. All in there. But I will, I'll flash a graphic of the cover of that, because I have this one here, but I don't think the other one is in the other room. But I'm going to say this, what they're going for is a transhumanist system. And what they're going to do initially is they're going to go for a kind of guaranteed basic income idea. And then a person is going to be able to,
For some. For others, you can run down their family net worth. So you can run out their current net worth. So they're going to try and harvest that. And other people they're going to cull. You know, let's be real honest, what we saw in New York, we saw culling.
Right.
That was a cull.
Yeah.
So we're seeing people literally targeted and killed. And it wouldn't surprise me if you look what they did in New York, if that was basically an insurance relief act.
Right.
Because you've got the long-term care insurance industry in real trouble. Their payouts are skyrocketing.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the same problem with Medicare, Social Security, and and the health guys. They all promise things they can't afford.
Right.
So we're watching a culling. And my concern on the next 4 years is that culling going to accelerate?
Absolutely. Well, let's take a look at New York real quickly and use it as a model for this discussion. They got rid of a number of businesses. They got rid of Main Street in New York. Is the idea that, and Cuomo wanted to push with Gates, who he's getting support from and has all these initiatives with, the idea of never going back to physical school, that schools can always be virtual. So are they thinking, because you've talked a lot about real estate here, they look at New York and they say, we get rid of all that real estate, we build all this new stuff, it's a smart city, we connect everyone in through that, and this is an easy way to throw all those people out of there. And also, when we talk about the school part, those school buildings and all that stuff, we can use all that. We can scrap that too and make smart cities with that.
You know, I'm not sure. Clearly, somebody's going to pick up a lot of real estate in New York cheap. This is a very long-term vision.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what population do they want to swing in? I'm not certain. They clearly have very big plans for New York. I mean, my concern with the kids is you want kids online so you can do surveillance and mind control.
Right.
So there's no doubt they want complete control of the kids. They want to break up the family. I mean, if they could birth kids in test tubes, they would. They do not want, if you look at the love of a man and a woman, or a parent of a father or a mother for a child, those are the love bonds they want to break up because it keeps them from controlling. So the love of parents for a child is the most powerful political force on the planet. And it's the one they've never been able to bust.
You know, Klaus Schwab brought it up recently in a tweet saying something along the same line that this is something that needs to be looked at and changed.
Well, if you look at a human as livestock.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you and I look at a human as a sovereign individual. But they look at a human as livestock.
Right.
So, you know, you've seen the movie Forgotten with Julianna Moore.
Uh-huh.
Right. That's the story of not being able to destroy the bond between a mother and a child.
Right.
Right.
Catherine, it seems like you're spelling out their endgame here. There's a kind of shock and awe that we're seeing that's being deployed by the globalist syndicate. How do you see this all playing out?
Right now, we have two different visions. And one vision is a vision of life and living things, where we are connecting and resonating electromagnetically with all life, with the birds, with the trees, with each other. Okay. What they're trying to implement is a system where there's no, life is not allowed to resonate. You've got a social distance. You've got to wear a mask. You've got to, your body's got to be filled with little things that allow you to be a receiver. You've got to walk around with your surveillance device and be mind controlled. And they're trying to break all life down into something that can resonate with their machine.
Right.
And it can be hooked up on AI and software, and it can teach the robots how to do all the human jobs. You know, and basically they're trying to take all the connections in life and put a toll booth between them and recircuit the thing into their machine. Now, if you look at the design of what they're trying to do, it's hard for most people to fathom because it's, if you understand life, it's so psychopathic, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to give them credit because the hubris is off the charts. But that's what it's about. And so ultimately, you know, part of the issue of sovereignty is not just are our physical bodies sovereign, are our minds sovereign, but is our electromagnetic space sovereign?
Right.
Because a lot of the manipulation is working through this. They are trying to assert electromagnetic control of our body and our intelligence.
Through injecting nanoparticles, through dropping particles in chemtrails, through different types of systems.
Right. But I think they're prototyping. I don't think, you know, I think they're trying lots of different stuff. If you come into Solari after you log in, we have something called Dr. Gates's Creepy Technology Database.
Right.
and we just, you know, during the year, all the creepy technology that, and all the announcements, we just throw it into Dr. Gates's Creepy Technology Database. And it's astonishing. If you look at State of the Currencies, I have a section called Human Ingestibles and Injections, and it's got a summary of a lot of the big different kind of creepy technology they're they're trying. Because if you say, okay, well, this is a mark of the beast system, the question is, okay, which technology are they going to use? And I don't think they know. I think they're going to try lots of different things. And I don't underestimate the ability they have of sort of killing us while they're prototyping this. So never seen an experimentation. I mean, if you look at the allegations of human experimentation done by the Germans during World War II, It doesn't hold a candle to this. You're talking about massive poisoning, human experimentation on the entire global population.
Right. Incredible.
Incredible.
Catherine, before we go, you wanted me to mention a documentary here.
I was part of doing an interview for a French documentary called Hold Up. I don't know if you've heard about it.
Yes.
It just launched this Monday.
Wow.
It's called Hold Up, and it is absolutely fantastic. I only met the guys because I was interviewing them. I was going to go to Paris, but then the lockdown came, and so I did it over Zoom. These guys are fabulous. They're very, very good. But they're wonderful human beings. It was only a first impression, but I just love this team of people. And the documentary is sensational. And the people they got the interviews with, you're talking about really serious expertise in medicine and science. I mean, it's an amazing thing. And if you look at their graphics, anyway, so this thing is really good. And we have one of our hosts on the Solaire Report is French, and she says it's the talk of social media. Well, it only took 2 days for Vimeo to shut them down. YouTube and Vimeo just shut them down. Boom. Unbelievable to watch. Because, you know, these guys, you know, this was very professionally done. Okay, so they shut them down. They used a copyright on something. I don't know what it was. So they're back up on Odyssey. And if you come into my Gab, you can get it. Or they're tprod.fr is their thing, but it's really, really professional. So they're now doing a crowdfund because, you know, Vimeo, they were going to charge some small amount on Vimeo. Anyway, so the English will be out in 2 weeks, but if you look at the speed at which they shut this thing down, or they tried to, it was amazing, which tells me they don't feel confident. They're running scared.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. It's fascist censorship.
You know what? This is fascinating. I'm getting so many ideas from what you're telling me, because there's a whole thing I've learned about how when somebody gets shut off on YouTube, it sends a flag over to Twitter, and then they shut the Twitter off, and then Patreon gets the word, and then they shut them off. And before you know it, that guy opens up his thing. He had a whole thing going. He had Twitter. He had YouTube. He had Patreon. And boom, they're all gone in the same day.
Right.
Pretty fascinating.
Catherine, truly amazing information today. Thank you. We'll have you back shortly for more incredible insights on the reset regime that's attempting to control every aspect of humanity. This is authoritarian, and the world needs a wake-up call to expose what's really going on, and I think you gave them that ring today. Of course, all of your work is available at Solari.com. I want to remind everyone to go to darkjournalist.com for more upcoming interviews, documentaries, and special reports. Remember to join us Friday night at 8 p.m. for the X series. See you soon.